Welcome to the Torah Teachers Roundtable, Apostolic Edition, with your hosts Rob Miller, Mark Patron, and yours truly, Mark Call. We hope you'll find this discussion entertaining, thought-provoking, and that above all, you'll be like the Bereans and search out the scriptures for yourself, see if these things be true. All right. Good afternoon, folks. Happy Tuesday, and welcome back. It's time for the Torah Teachers Roundtable, the Tanakh version thereof. And now we are talking about the book of Isaiah, working our way through the words of that particular prophet. There's a whole lot of stuff in here, as you might suspect. We're up to about chapter 8 at this point. And again, I guess if there's an overriding theme to me, it's that so much of this seems to literally resonate. Maybe it does throughout all time, but especially today. And as we entered the end of the show last week, we got to the end of the show, we had just started chapter 8, and essentially the topic has to do with, moreover, Yahuwah says to the prophet, take a large scroll, write on it with a man's pen concerning this name, Maher Shalal Hashbaz, and I'll take for myself faithful witnesses, he said, to record it. Then I went to the prophetess, she conceived and bore a son, and the Yahuwah said to me, call his name, the name we just heard, Maher Shalal Hashbaz. And yet, for before the child shall have knowledge to cry, my father or my mother, the riches of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be taken away before the king of Assyria. So he spoke a bit more. That's about where we ended last week. And what I'll do at this point is to say good afternoon to MP. For now, at least, we're talking about another option or so. Hopefully, we'll have a more of a roundtable as opposed to just a seesaw here in the next week or two. But in any case, MP, you basically had said, hey, we'll just kind of start over and summarize the chapter. So let me turn it over to you, say good afternoon, and let you go ahead and do that. Take us where you'd like, and then we'll pick it up where we left off.
I would love to do that, but I just misplaced my notes.
Well, you know, the words I love to hear, wing it. So that's
you're. Yeah. Hang on.
Okay.
This is so frustrating.
Well, while you're doing that, I will read a couple more verses just so that we don't put anybody on the stand on the spot here. Yahuwah spoke to me again, it says verse 5, saying, inasmuch as these people refuse the waters of Shiloh that flow softly and rejoice in Rezin and in Remaliah's son, now, therefore, behold, Yahuwah brings up over them the waters of the river. And that would be the Euphrates, say the sages in this case, strong and mighty, the king of Assyria and all his glory. He will go up over all his channels and go over all his banks. So we're going to have some flooding, it sounds like. He will pass through Judah. He will overflow and pass over. He will reach up to the neck, and the stretching out of his wings will fill the breadth of your land. O Emmanuel, and of course we know that word, we've heard it before, Elohim with us, or El with us.
Yes.
All right, so all right. Are you ready?
Yeah. Okay, we're going. We're good.
Well, go ahead then.
Okay, Azamra has a very good intro. You know, Azamra is an Orthodox Jewish website, and they've got commentary on all kinds of stuff, so and it's really very good. Anyway. Here's what they got to start out. Like the prophecy of the previous chapter, chapter 7, the present prophecy dates to the fourth year of the reign of King Ahaz, when Yehuda was under the most serious threat from the invading armies of Rezin, king of Aram, Syria, and Pekah ben Remaliahu, the king of Israel. Okay, so the king of Aram is named Rezin, which derives from the Hebrew 7521 Ratzah, which probably from Ratzon, okay, to satisfy, to approve, to favor, or to delight. The Confederacy of Syria and Israel in Yeshayahu looks a lot like the Lebanon-Syria et al., China-Russia, group that are backing Hamas as I write today, where Israel's only ally seems to be Sleepy Joe in the United States of America.
How's that for sad?
Oh, it's really bad. However, Israel is doing quite a good job of getting rid of the terrorists. And anyway, at least from what I'm seeing in the news. So watch out if Sleepy Joe and the American government pulls its support from Bibi in Israel. It'll be eventually, and maybe very quickly, hell on all of those disparate, self-serving nations who turn and run from Israel. Okay, back to the text. Azamra has a short comment on verse 1 as well. They say, "And Hashem said to me, take a great scroll and write on it in the pen of a man, the spoil speeds, the prey hastens." The prophet was commanded to write a document attesting to Elohim's promise of salvation to Yehuda, because the kingdoms of Aram and Israel and of Israel would soon fall prey to Assyria. Now, just whom do you think is now sitting in charge of the land that was Assyria in our passage? If you said Iran, Iraq, you would be correct. Seems as though the entire history of the area revolves around Assyria, Babylon, and their desire to subjugate Judah, Israel, doesn't it? The same war has been raging for at least the last 5,000 years since the Exodus from Egypt, and I think actually goes back to Noah's flood and the enmity between Ham, Japheth, and Shem, whom I think was Melchizedek who blessed Abraham. That enmity exists to this day.
Wait a second.
Is on, who
was
again?
Who are you thinking? You think, or is it Azamra? Who? What about Melchizedek?
I'm thinking that Melchizedek is the guy who blessed Abraham.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah,
was Shem, the son of Noah. He was a very old man, and he's the guy that did the blessing over Abraham. So that's what I think. And, you know, I could be wrong, but I really do doubt it. So, where was I? Here we go. The enmity exists to this day. Japheth is on again, off again about Shem's descendants, and Ham is still ticked at Noach blessed him, cursed him rather, for betting his, that is Noach's wife, not the boy's mama. One possible meaning of uncover nakedness, okay? Uncovering of your father's nakedness means to look in on your mother or his wife, okay? Because that's his nakedness. Here's what it says in Genesis 9, verses 19 to 27, just to back that up. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. And Noah began to be an husbandman, and he planted a vineyard. And he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered within his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders, and they went backwards and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. And Noah awoke from his wine and knew that his younger son had done unto him. And he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren." And he said, "Blessed is Yah, the God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant." Now, uncovering your father's nakedness again could mean that he walked in and he saw his father's wife lying naked, sleeping. And he went in and he told his brothers. And I think that that's why he got cursed. Okay.
Okay. Now just by way of fairness, MP, there is no shortage of speculation. I mean, no shortage whatsoever of lots of speculation as to what this could be. So forgive me if I'm just a little bit skeptical that it's one thing and one thing only, or that that's the necessary answer, because I've certainly heard other ones that make at least as much sense in my mind.
Exactly. But it absolutely makes sense in my mind, and that's why I share it. Maher Shalal Hashbaz looks like three root words jammed together. Mahar means to hastening to cement a relationship. Shalal means to seize or to capture. And Hashbaz means to eager to plunder. Hastening to seize, capture, plunder other people's stuff. That's Mahar Shalal Hashbaz. You put it all together. Can you see how that would describe at least Samaria and Assyria in Yeshayahu's day? If all of that is correct, which it may not be, and I'm open to correction, the entities that are giving Yehuda a war today may be the descendants of those who were giving it to Yehuda then. And I would not be surprised in the least. Hasatan is a cruel taskmaster who won't stand for any guff. F.B. Meyer's comment in Blue Letter Bible says this. Ahaz, as we have seen, summoned the king of Assyria to his aid. This policy, dictated by human prudence, was fraught with vast peril. He and his advisors would rue their choice and would have to pay dearly for introducing Assyria into the complicated politics of these minor states. Though this policy might affect a temporary success, like that which Yeshayahu indicated in the naming of his newborn child, yet ultimately it would work out disastrously in the depopulation and desolation of the country. The impoverished peasants would have one cow instead of a herd and two sheep instead of a flock. Is not this true of all the expedients which we substitute for faith in Elohim? At first, they promise well, but they disappoint and fail. It is the old lesson, lean not to thine own understanding, in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. And I'm open to questions and comments on verse 1. That's what I commented on. I'll be happy to move on if you'd like.
Okay, I guess I'll ask the same question I've been asking. Where exactly was all of that headed? It's not clear.
I came upon the word Mahar Shalal Hashbaz and I broke it down, and that's where I was coming from throughout all of that.
Right. Okay. So, well, we haven't seen what it's headed.
And I hit on some other minor things that touched on it, and that's why I had so much commentary there.
Okay, yeah, I got lost in some of the other stuff, I guess. All right, are you ready to continue then?
I'm that was verse 1. I got stuff on verses 2 and 3.
Good. Well, go for it.
Okay, let me wet my whistle and I'll be right with you. All right, here we go. Zamra opens with this on verse 2. And I took to myself faithful witnesses. It is customary for a document to be signed by a minimum of two valid witnesses. Although the simple meaning of the verse is that Yeshayahu took as witnesses two men who were living in his time, the Midrashic explanation is that he invoked two future prophets, Uriah, who was to prophesy in the reign of King Jehoiakim, and that Zion will be plowed like a field in Jeremiah 26:20 and in Micah chapter 3 and verse 12, and Zechariah, whose book is indeed in the 12, included rather in the 12 minor prophets, and who was to be prophesy at the beginning of the Second Temple period that old men and women will yet sit in the streets of Jerusalem in Zechariah chapter 8 and verse 4. What is the connection between Uriah and Zechariah? Uriah prophesied harsh punishments, whereas Zechariah offered consolation. This comes to teach that the prophecy of Uriah testifies to the prophecy of Zechariah. Just as the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, so will the prophecy of Zechariahu be fulfilled. Okay, the question I had is, which prophetess? There were quite a few prophetesses in Israel in Yehuda's history. In verse 2, we see an unusual name that is only used here in all of Scripture, and that is Yevarechyahu. Yevarechyahu. Got it? Yevarechecha. Got it?
Yeah.
Which means, may you be blessed of Yah. The second part of the sentence gives me to think that Yeshayahu was married to this particular prophetess, because after he went unto the prophetess, she conceived and bore him a son in verse 3. Yevarechyahu was the wife of Yeshayahu. I think it actually put that together correctly, and I'm going to run with it. Okay, I believe that that's the case. He was married to a prophetess. Yeshayahu was. And she was married to another prophet. Okay, that's what I got through verse 2. I can keep on going if you'd like.
Yeah, continue. I'm anxious to see where all this connects together. That's the curious thing.
Later in the chapter. Anyway.
Well, we're going to get there, so let's... Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just said, well, you'll get there. That's important. That's the point.
Okay. Pardon me. I got a chest cold. Verse 3, according to Azamra, I drew near to the prophetess, and she conceived and bore a son. Rashi's opinion is that this son of Yeshayahu's is the same as the son whose birth was prophesied in the previous chapter, Yeshayahu chapter 7, verse 14, and who was there called Emmanuel, as a sign that Elohim would be with Chizkiyahu when he would reign after Ahaz and save and have the face of Sennacherib, rather, have to face Sennacherib. In the present prophecy, God tells Yeshayahu to call his son by names indicating the imminent defeat of Retzin, king of Aram, and Pekah ben Remaliahu, king of Israel. This was an aspect of his providence over Chizkiyahu, since the two invaders sought to bring the rule of the house of David to an end. When Yeshayahu's son was born, Yah told him to call his name Maher Shalal Hashbaz. Now, my question is this. Did Yah hint at what he wanted Yeshayahu to call his next son before giving him the order? Or did he just kind of spring it on him when his prophetess wife conceived his next child? The answer to that question is given in, guess where? Verse 4, which is interesting. I think it's saying in verse 4 that it says, before the child shall have knowledge to cry, my mother and my father, okay? Did he just kind of, the answer to that question is in verse 4, which is interesting. I think it's saying that the child that Yeshayahu had been told to call Mahar Shalal Hashbaz won't have learned to cry mama and papa and learned how effective it can be in getting his way. Then the Assyrian king will have made off with all the riches of Damascus and Shomron, Samaria. Guess what Babylon and Assyria will have done to Jerusalem and Shomron? If you guessed raped, pillaged, you might be right. No. You would be right. That's what's going to happen to Jerusalem and Shomron at this point. Okay, anything you got on that?
You don't have to guess. Orvis? That's generally what history suggests tends to happen, and that's part of the reason why Torah is so insistent upon different things happening.
Yeah, exactly. All right, where are we? Six minutes to the break. Okay. And, Zamra has this on verse 5. Have we read verse 5 yet?
I did, yes. I read a couple more verses. Yep.
Okay, here we go. And Hashem spoke to me further in verse 5. Commentators explain that the following passage alludes to the fifth column that was already present in Jerusalem in the time of Ahaz. when Pekah ben Remaliahu wanted to rule over Yehuda, and which developed into a major threat in the time of Hizkiyahu, when Jerusalem came under siege by Sennacherib and Shebna. Hizkiyahu's scribe wanted to go out to him and capitulate. That's in Yeshayahu chapter 22, verse 15 and 37, verse 2. F.B. Meyer's commentary on in Esort X also has a good comment in this particular episode. They say, it seems likely that Syria and Samaria attacked Ahaz because he would not join in a federation against the growing power of Assyria. A strong party seems to have pressed this policy on him. But in all such schemes, they repudiate the divine protection in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 6. Ahaz, at the court party, on the other hand, sought to federate with Assyria. But Isaiah never ceased to urge that the true line of defense was to put away whatever was inconsistent with the fear of Elohim. He would be the sanctuary of defense and hiding in the day of trouble. If men will not build on Elohim's foundation stone, they fall over it to their hurt. They'll trip over it and fall down. And let's see. I hope that Hizkiyahu hanged Pekah ben Remaliahu by his neck until he was dead, dead, dead. TSK alludes to the parallel passage in 2 Chronicles 13, verses 8 through 18. And I'll go ahead and hit on that. And now we think to withstand, now ye think to withstand the kingdom of Yah in the hand of the sons of David. And ye, a great multitude, and with you golden calves, which Jeroboam made you for gods. Have ye not cast out the priests of Yah, the sons of Aaron and the Levi'im, and have made you priests after the manner of the nations of other lands, so that whosoever cometh to consecrate himself with a young bullock and seven rams may be a priest of no gods? But as for us, Yah Eloheinu, and we have not forsaken him, and the priests which minister unto Yah, the sons of Aharon, and the Levites, wait upon their business. And they burn unto Yah every morning and every evening burnt sacrifices and sweet incense, the showbread also upon the pure table and the candlestick of gold with the lamps thereof, to burn ever-ending, so we keep the charge of Yah Eloheinu, but ye have forsaken him. And behold, Elohim himself with us for a captain, and his priests with sounding trumpets to a cry alarm against you. O children of Israel, fight ye not against Yah Elohim of your fathers, for ye shall not prosper. But Jeroboam caused an ambushment to come about behind them. So they were before Yehuda, and the ambushment behind them. And when Judah looked back, behold, the battle was before and behind, and they cried unto Yah, and the priests sounded with their trumpets. Then the men of Judah gave a shout, and as the men of Judah shouted, it came to pass that God smote Jeroboam and all Israel before Abiyahu and Yehuda. And the children of Israel fled before Judah, and Elohim delivered them into their hand. And Abiyahu and his people slew them with a great slaughter, so there fell down slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. Thus the children of Israel were brought under at that time, and the children of Yehuda prevailed, because they relied on Yah, Elohim of their fathers. And we're about 20 seconds from the break.
Okay. Well, I guess we don't have time for me to say, can you connect a few more dots? Cause I'm a little bit lost, MP, with all of the stuff that was thrown out there as far as where it all connects. So honestly, I'm hoping after we get back, you can do that for us.
And I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds,
dum dooby doo dum dum. Camel camel dum dooby doo dum dum. Camel camel dum dooby doo dum dum. Keeping Dora's a joy to do. Let's say that line bound by the law. The 16 and many more. Don't they know what's really true? You should die for me and you. I keep the peace and troubles too. 6,000 years old, it's not.
All right, we are back, folks. This is the Torah Teachers Roundtable. We're talking about Chapter 8 of the Book of Yeshayahu or Isaiah. We went to break, and essentially what I was interested in having, giving Mark a chance to do, was to try to see if he can't connect some of those dots. Lots of dots laid out there, Mark, but I'll admit, I think somewhere along the line, you lost me. I don't know how much the audience was following, but if you could just kind of connect a little bit of that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just taking what was in the text and in the cross references and putting it all together. We got a battle going on in Israel in this particular thing here.
Okay, that part's true. In this chapter, clear.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm showing where all of that came from. I mean, I've been just starting with Noah and his wife and his sons and all that stuff. That stuff all ties in as well.
Okay. Well, perhaps part of the reason why I got lost in there was because it wasn't clear to me that the stuff with Noah and his wife and his son is necessarily something that I would sign up for. So if I lose on the initial premise, then a lot of what follows kind of tends to fall apart. I don't follow it. So maybe that's what I'm having some difficulty with here.
Okay. Well, you know, we're seeing this some of the same stuff. I told you about Ham walking in and I thought that it was talking about he saw his mother's, or not his mother's, but his father's wife asleep on the floor naked, and he went out and told his brothers about it, and that got a curse put on him by Noah.
Okay, so if that's the case, okay, why did they walk backwards in and cover their father? See, that's one of the things
It said they covered his nakedness. It didn't say they covered their father.
Okay,
his
they covered.
This was his
so why not say what it is then? Usually the Bible is fairly clear. I can understand a point of saying something metaphorically if there's a reason for it, but in this case, I don't see what the reason is. If in fact they walked in backwards so as not to see their father's nakedness, then sounds to me like that's what it means. But I mean, you know, as you like to say, I could be wrong, but I'll admit I don't follow the line of reasoning.
Well, okay. All right. Well,
anyway, so what does that got to do with, so there's a lot of battles that happen in here. I don't see if that necessarily follows.
Yeah, exactly. What the deal is that this is where the split comes between Canaan and everybody else. Okay, and that's the background for what's going on in this chapter as well.
Okay, now that part I do understand. That makes sense.
Yeah.
We obviously
that was where I was coming from anyway.
Okay. Well, we certainly have a split,
okay,
and there certainly are some animosities that continue to this day.
Yeah, there certainly are. And we're seeing it. Gog Magog is coming. I really and truly see it coming very, very quickly. I think it got started with the Russia-Ukraine thing and what's-his-name in the White House sending all that cash and all that equipment to Ukraine. And it's all just culminating right now in what I believe we're coming up on the end of days. for this earth. I mean, the way that this earth is running. Because Messiah will be here very shortly to straighten it all out. That's sort of how I see it anyway. I think we're just about 6,000 years in, and it's time for Messiah to return and take over, make everything right.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm not going to argue that it would certainly be nice if he would return. So Bo Mashiach is something people are probably used to hearing by now.
Oh, yeah. Bo Mashiach, Bo, please, get here. okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Let's, I can move on a little bit here. I'm through almost a third of my notes for tonight, by the way. Looks as though it pays to trust Yah. Okay, Stone Sanak has this on verse 6. The humble and unassuming house of David is likened to the Shiloah, Jerusalem's water supply. There were people in Yehuda who preferred to rule the rule of Aram, Syria, and the 10 tribes to that of the Davidic dynasty. This chapter refers to them as this people and not my people in verse 6.
We read through verse 8.
My father, my mother, the riches and all that. Before the child has a chance to understand that, he's going to be the lineage will be broken. Okay, so the humble and unassuming house of David is likened to Shiloh, Jerusalem's water supply. There were people in... I've read that. Okay. The waters of the river refers specifically to the Euphrates that flows through Babylon, Assyria, and then present the king of... and the then-present, rather, king of Assyria. Did I read this? Here's a Zamra on verses 6 through 8. Have I done this? I don't think so. Because this people refuse the waters of Shiloah, which go softly, and rejoice in Retzin, the son of Ramaliahu, the gentle waters of the Shiloah spring, which is at the southern foot of the Temple Mount, allude to the house of David, whose kings were anointed by their side. Many of the inhabitants of Judah despised the kingship of the house of David, which seemed weak in comparison to the kingdom of Ephraim, and they wanted Pekah ben Ramaliahu to be king, according to Metzudas David. I did read that. Okay, let me get to the next issue here. The waters of Shiloah are elsewhere known as the Spring of Siloam, and was well known for its sometimes miraculous healing effects.
Okay.
This
Most
is where
in
Yochanan 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where in Yochanan 9, Yeshua sent the blind man on whose eyes he had smeared mud made with some dirt and Yeshua's own spittle. Siloam was just over there where Yeshua sent the man. Siloam means sent. Okay, so here's the gospel passage. As Yeshua passed by, he saw a man which was blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Yeshua answered, Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of Elohim may be made manifest in him. Work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Then when he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, Go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is, by interpretation, sent. He went his way, therefore, and washed, and came seeing. The neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him that he was blind, said, Is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, This is he, and others said, No, he is like him. And he said, No, I am he. Therefore said they unto him, How were your eyes opened? And he answered and said, A man that is called Yehoshua, made clay and anointed my eyes and said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam, that means sent, and wash. And I went and washed, and I received my sight. Then they asked the guy, who, remember, had never seen only 30 seconds ago, to point Yeshua out to them. Now, had I been he, it would have taken me every ounce of restraint to not say, hey, I was blind from my birth.
You think I'm really going to recognize the faces? Yeah.
And you expect me to point out the guy whom I never laid eyes on to you? Are you really that freaking stupid? Wake up! That's how I would have answered him anyway. Then I would turn to someone whose voice I recognized, okay, because this guy was going by voices all of his life, and said, do you believe this idiot? Yeah, I'd have been excommunicated like the actual guy was when he much more politely pointed out the Prushim's error. It had to have been a Pharisee, seemingly blind to any other but the party line, which was probably the point of the entire John 9 episode, by the way. The prideful, self-important religious leadership of Israel and the church hadn't changed in over 800 years. Now, Rezin and Remaliyahu, Yah has adorned with gems, is what his name means, his son, was seen in chapter 7 in verses 1 through 7. Shall I share that particular thing, MC, by the way? We read that like last week.
Yeah, go ahead. Just go ahead.
Okay. And it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliyahu, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. And it was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. Then said Yah unto Yeshayahu, go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou and Sha'er Yashuv, thy son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. And say unto him, take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither be faint-hearted, for the two tails of these smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin with Assyria, and the son of Remaliyahu, because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliyahu had taken evil counsel against thee, saying, let us go up against Yehuda and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, and set a king in the midst of it, the son of Tovel. Thus saith Adonai Yah, it shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass. Yah is telling the king here that these guys have all planned this, and he's already got something worked out for it. It's not going to happen the way they want it to. It's going to happen the way Yah wants it to. That's what I got through verse 6 of Isaiah chapter 8.
Okay. Well, are you ready to continue? Let's read some more then.
Yeah, why don't you read some more?
Okay, so I'll read from verse 9, which is where we stopped. So, Be shattered, O you peoples, and be broken in pieces. Give ear, all you from far countries. Gird yourselves, but be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, but be broken in pieces. Notice he repeats that again. Gird yourselves, right, but be broken in pieces. Take counsel together, but it'll come to nothing. Speak the word, but it will not stand, for El is with us. Now notice, this is the same Emmanuel that we've heard just a couple verses earlier. So literally, it's a repetition. So there are several things in here that are repetitions, and you got to figure that's important, especially when it sounds like he is saying something that, do what you're planning on doing, but it ain't going to work out so well. I'll read. Well, let's pause there. That's a decent breaking spot.
Okay, you're broken. Verse 9?
Correct.
Okay. Then I'll cover that much. Here, Adonai seems to be bringing...
Ten. I read
like
through
a
ten. I'm sorry.
Water. Oh, you got to, through ten? Okay. Here, Adonai seems to be bringing, like a deluge of water from upstream, strong and many, is how KJV translates it, which is actually the armies of Assyria in all its glory. Assyria was in the northwestern two-thirds of Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates, and this would be what is today Iran, Iraq, Syria, and the southern areas of Russia. Basically, the ideological, political entities making war with Israel as we study today. Okay? I've said before, and I repeat it now, that the wars that the Biden administration has been backing are all a part of the Gog-Umagog alliance, which is being brought together for us on our nightly news in late 2023. If we apply biblical history to our present-day troubles, Gog and Magog are, I think, Ukraine and Russia and all their allies, which constitutes most of the Asian continent and the rest of the world order. The end of days wars are, quite possibly, already underway as we study today, and in at least the immediate future. By the way, I am of the opinion that the marks of TTRT, Hebrew Nation Radio, and almost every other biblically sound outreach ministry are in some way under scrutiny by Gog Umagog as we speak. I'm going to tell you something, Mark. I guarantee you that we got bad guys listening in on this radio program right now so that they can get stuff on us.
Well, that's,
anyway,
yeah, I mean, we've known that for a long time. The bad guys basically are being paid to do it, and they're getting that done with your tax dollars at work and so forth and so on. So I can't say that that's at all surprising. Hopefully regular listeners are probably understanding what we're talking about there.
Oh, yeah. What happened in biblical history is going to happen again in the end of days, okay? And that's what's right around the corner for us. If truth is being, you said, wanted to say something?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. If truth is being spread, the adversary needs to try to shut it down. Hence, Gog Umagog. I could be wrong. But, the king of Assyria in verse 8, shall pass through Yehuda. His breath, as an overflowing stream, shall reach to the midst of the neck, to sift the nations with the sieve of vanity, and a bridle in the jaws of the people, causing them to err. That's in Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 28. The Assyrian king, if this happens soon, would be Putin, Xi, the PLO chief, all of the above, maybe, as an alliance against the West, which is showing itself quite weak on the evening news, thanks to the so-called leadership of the Western power centers. If I haven't been clear, let me clarify again. The Western nations, led by the U.S. of A., is being run by idiots that dodder from one crooked deal to the next. Think Sleepy Joe, et al., Emmanuel, Yehuda, is showing itself to be weak and wavering, unlike her namesake. Okay, that's what I got through verse 8. You got anything to... add to any of that?
Okay. Well, I guess my general take is it's always interesting to me. People tend to want to say, okay, this particular reference in scripture is Putin, or this particular reference is so and so. And I tend to try to, maybe that's part of the thing I'm trying to do here in the look at this today, to take a little bit of a step back and say, We maybe get too wrapped up in the metaphors and which nation is which, and just simply need to focus on the fact that
right.
We're describing peoples that are not walking in obedience to the Creator and various degrees of evil that are involved. I mean, for example, I look at Israel today and I say, okay, one thing we know for sure, the Israel that is the political socialist nation that does not seem to have much to do with Torah. They may pay lip service to Sabbath and a couple of other things, but they're one of the gayest nations on earth when it comes to breaking his Torah, they excel at it. So, you know, there's a danger, in other words, in my mind, in getting too wrapped up in this particular nation as it is exactly, you know, what we're seeing in Scripture. No, I tend to think what we're really should be focused on are the metaphorical levels of who's walking in obedience to the Creator, who's not. And when we look at it that way, this whole thing seems to be a lot more simple, to my mind, than some folks would like to make it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is. You know, Yah is making sure that all of the things are going to drop into place the way they're supposed to drop into place, you know, and the bad guys are going to get the upper hand, and Messiah Yeshua is going to come straighten it all up. That's the way I see it. I mean, things are just going to get worse, and they're not going to get better anytime soon if the good guys, the so-called good guys, don't actually start working to do it, to make it right. You know, we got, like I said, we got Putin and Xi and Zelensky. It's looking like Zelensky's going to get thrown under the bus.
Yeah, I think he's been thrown. He just hadn't figured it out yet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's wearing a flannel. No, it's not a flannel shirt. It's a knit shirt with camouflage, you know. And he does that to visit with other nations in their houses of Congress. Okay, the guy spoke to Congress, a joint session of Congress, in a pullover shirt, not in a suit.
Yeah,
what
well,
a piece of garbage that guy is.
He plays piano with his penis. What do we expect? That's his. To my mind, that's his career highlight. So I'm not a real fan.
Yeah, I've never seen the guy in a suit. It's disgusting.
Okay,
he's the leader of a nation.
No, he's no more the leader of a nation than Biden is. That's the problem here. And that's why I say we gotta be careful, ascribing too much. If we just step back and look through the claims, Biden doesn't lead anything, for crying out loud. Neither does Zelensky, really. They're puppets is probably doing a disservice to, Charlie McCarthy. Yeah. If you remember back that far.
Yeah, or Howdy Doody.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Pardon me. Okay, so let me move on a little bit further here. We got two minutes before the time. No, it's only about
just
a minute.
About a minute and a half.
Anyway, when we associate ourselves with the New World Order, we will be broken in so many pieces, like Humpty Dumpty. See? Yeah. As to make putting all of back together again, quite impossible for all but Yah himself. The Zamra on verse 10 says this, take counsel together, but it shall come to naught. Speak a word, but it shall not stand, for Elohim is with us. Many customarily repeat this verse after each of the daily prayer services as a powerful protection against the machinations of the wicked. Okay, that's a Zamra. I love these guys. I really do. Anyway, I take verses 9 and 10 differently than TSK does.
Okay, well, we'll take a little bit of a break, too, and we'll pick it up after the top of the hour.
Don't take me soon, because I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more war, and our children will pay. Sometimes I land under the moon.
Welcome to the Torah Teachers Roundtable, Apostolic Edition, with your hosts Rob Miller, Mark Patron, and yours truly, Mark Call. We hope you'll find this discussion entertaining, thought-provoking, and that above all, you'll be like the Bereans and search out the scriptures for yourself, see if these things be true.
I know someday,
All right, we are back, folks. The second hour now of the Torah Teachers Roundtable, talking about the book of Isaiah, chapter 8. And as we went to break, I guess what we were at was kind of some modern parallels and discussions about who was what and whether or not there were the things that are being described here are exactly what we're seeing today or something different. I'm always a little bit skeptical of that for reasons that I mentioned. But MP, I think we interrupted you, or at least maybe you weren't quite complete with what you were headed to. So if you got more you want to add before we read on?
we've read through what, verse 10?
Verse 10, yeah.
Okay, well then, yeah, I think I've covered all of that. I'll tell you what, give me a minute, I'll cover 9 and 10 again, make sure that we got a good flow. When we associate ourselves with the New World Order, we will be broken in so many pieces, like Humpty Dumpty, as to make putting it all back together again impossible for all but Yah himself. The Zamra, on verse 10, say this, take counsel together, but it shall come to naught. Speak a word, but it shall not stand, for Elohim is with us. Many customarily repeat this verse after each of the daily prayer services as a powerful protection against the machinations of the wicked. I take verses 9 and 10 differently than TSK does. They seem to think that this is positive. I see it as a warning that our taking counsel together with the Assyrian king will come to naught.
By the way, I agree with you, MP.
I'm sorry?
I said, by the way, I agree with you on that score.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't see how anybody who knows scripture at all can disagree with it. I mean, we are not to enter a confederacy with any but Yah, but stand against any confederacy that doesn't have Yah involved. We are not to associate ourselves with anyone but Yah. He is with us, not any New World Order confederacy of any kind. Okay, and we can read verses 11 through 12 or 13, if you'd like.
I may go a little bit further on this one, because I think there's a grouping there that fits. For Yahuwah spoke thus to me with a strong hand.
17.
Yahuwah spoke thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying the following. Now, this is going to sound really familiar. Do not say they're a conspiracy theorist. Well, it says, don't say a conspiracy concerning all that this people call a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. Now, see, here's one of those places where, again, forget what the scholars say. I read it, and I can't help but think, wow, this is talking about what we're seeing in the news today. Don't be calling it a conspiracy. Don't be afraid of their threats or be troubled. Yahuwah Zevuot, him you shall hallow. Let him be your fear. Let him be your dread. He will be as a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. Now, when I read this, again, I'm going to refer to both whoring houses, the northern kingdom, Ahola, southern kingdom, Aholibah, Ephraim and Judah, the 10 lost tribes, a.k.a. Samaria. I mean, so many parallels. We see this over and over again in Scripture, but this one leaps off the page. He'll be as a sanctuary, a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. Gee, when most of us see that, we're going to think that describes Yeshua, doesn't it? To both houses of Israel, as a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and many among them shall stumble, they shall fall and be broken, be snared and taken. Okay, my commentary briefly on this, and maybe folks are probably, if they've heard me talk before, know where I'm already headed. Looks to me like both whoring houses see the real Yeshua, the real Mashiach, the real Torah made flesh, as a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. The whore church, basically, they'll say, no, Jesus did away with the law. Jesus did this. What does he say? There's a narrow path, few there be that find it. And by the way, a lot are going to come to me in that day saying, hey, Lord, Lord, didn't we do all this stuff in your name? And his response, I never knew you. The narrow way is the way you got to go, and few there be that find it. So when I see this and see the warning against the northern kingdom, I can't help but think he's talking to the whore church that's still out there in idolatry. to both houses of Israel, trap and a snare, and many among them shall stumble, they shall fall and be broken, be snared and taken. Okay, I mean, to my mind, Mark, as you like to say again, I could be wrong, but I can't read this without thinking exactly what we're seeing playing out around us. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I'm in complete agreement with you on this. Okay, verse 11. For Hashem spoke thus to me with a strong hand and warned me that I should not walk in the way of this people. That's verse 11. Okay, the way of this, all except Yah's people, in the way of this, okay, all except Yah's people, is to go after the false gods of the Baal and such worshipers which are no gods. Though they are spirit beings, most, if not all of them, dynamic entities. These entities may be able to practice a sleight of hand that can fool the gullible. But if the entity wants your worship, don't, just don't worship any of these entities, okay? As Zamra says, and the words are sound, the strong hand with which Elohim spoke to Yeshayahu was the hand of prophecy. And it says to check Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 14. Here it is right here. The Spirit lifted me up and took me away, and I went in bitterness in the heat of my spirit, but the hand of Yah was strong upon me. Don't get caught up in conspiracy theories, except in politics where everything is a conspiracy, or everywhere in politics, okay, conspiracy theories, but you can ignore them. Verse 12 is absolutely sound advice. Don't worry about conspiracy theories. Yah is in control. You follow the exhortations of verse 13, and that exhortation is sanctify Yah Tzevaot himself, and him, let him be your fear. Let him be your dread. Okay? Sanctify Yah Tzevaot himself, not anything or anyone else. Only he in this universe, and he's outside of the universe as a matter of fact, is on a higher spiritual plane than you. He gave his physical life so you wouldn't have to. He and we have spiritual life, a thing for which Hasatan can only envy. He knows his end, and he dreads it. I know my end, and I really can't wait, though I'm not going to do anything to hasten it that if I have to, if I don't have to. Anyway, well, maybe the chocolate. I might keep eating the chocolate. And that's what I got through verse 13. You want to comment on those?
Okay, no, well, I mean, I think I've already made the point I want to make. I want to continue, however, because I'm going to continue to contend that the next few verses buttress the same point. So we got, he'll be a sanctuary, a stone of stumbling, a rock of offense to both houses of Israel. Many will stumble, it says. So then it says this in verse 16. Now this too is going to run afoul of a lot of what you might call standard interpretation from the whore church. Bind up the testimony. Seal the Torah. It says law in the English. The word in the Hebrew there is Torah. Seal the Torah among my disciples, my taught ones, Matit Yahu, and I will wait on Yahuwah, who hides his face from the house of Yaakov. And I will hope in him. Now, let me pause and comment on that, because it's always fascinating to me. This is something I point out all the time. When you look and you see, remember, Jacob was renamed, right? The 12 sons of Jacob, he is renamed Israel. But unlike Abraham, who once he's renamed from Abram to Abraham, he's always Abraham. In the rest of Scripture, we see Israel and Jacob used not just over and over again. In other words, they didn't drop the name Jacob. They still call him Jacob a lot of times. There must be a reason for that. But sometimes we'll even see a reference to Jacob and Israel in the very same verse. As a matter of fact, it happens over and over again. I lost count of how many times you see, this to Jacob and this to Israel. So what's the point? Well, one of the perhaps oversimplified references is, Jacob seems to be the less spiritual indication. The carnal man is the way that the church likes to put it. I'm not wild about that phrase. But on the other hand, Israel then is the more spiritual application. So what is it saying here if that's true? Who hides his face from the house of Jacob, the 12 tribes that don't seem to know what their real heritage is. And I will hope in him. Now, in the English, this one is capitalized. I do think that's correct. So here am I, Hineni, and the children who hide Yahuwah has given me. We're for signs and wonders in Israel from Yahuwah Zevuot, who dwells in Mount Zion. So I will wait on Yahuwah, and this idea of binding up the testimony, sealing the Torah among my disciples, again, to me, that has just one obvious implication, and I hope we don't miss it. Anyway, go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Verses 14 to 17 give us a great promise or a dire warning. depends on what you're doing. Verse 14, and he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a gin and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait upon Yah that hideth his face from the house of Yaakov, and I will look for him. Now, Yaakov is the guy who was really kind of a nasty kind of guy. But Israel,
why do you say
that? Part of him was Yaakov was the one who was after stuff for himself, and Israel was the one who seemed to be after Yah's heart. In my estimation.
Okay, I don't know that I would go there with you, but I'll let you continue for sure. You're entitled to your opinion, as you say. I don't think he was that bad of a dude, and as part of the reason I'll suggest, he knew what his destiny was, he knew what he needed to do, and in general, although he wrestled with a lot of things, including himself, by and large, understand too that the general Hebraic understanding is he Yaakov is associated with truth, emet. So that ain't all bad. Anyway, maybe I'm overreacting there. Maybe he's not quite as off the rails as you were suggesting, or sounded like you were saying.
Okay. Where was I? Here we go. Don't get caught up in conspiracy theories. Have I read that? I don't think so. Don't get caught up in conspiracy theories, except in politics. Oh, yeah, never mind. Yeah,
you did. Yeah, you did.
They're everywhere in politics. Conspiracies are everywhere. Okay, so verse 15 tells us. Verse 15 tells us what will happen if we don't take Yah seriously. Five outcomes for not taking Yah at his word. There are five of them. First, we won't be able to get out of our own way. Okay? We'll trip. That is, the word is kashal, which means to stumble, over our own feet. And what will lead to all, that will lead to all kinds of injuries that Yah is probably using to wake us up. The second, we will nafal. Hebrew 5303 means to fall or drop down.
Okay.
Third, we will shavar, to break up into small pieces. Fourth, we will yakosh, which means to be ensnared. And fifth, we will be lachat, seized. None of that sounds like a lot of fun, so I choose not to partake. The Zamra gives us this commentary on verse 16. Bind up the testimony, seal the Torah among my disciples. The simple meaning of the verse is that Elohim's salvation is promised to those who seal his Torah in their hearts and those of their children and students. The Talmudic sages also adduced this verse as alluding to King Ahaz, efforts to seal the Torah. In other words, prevent its study. By closing down the children's cheders, and the study halls in the Sanhedrin 103b, according to Sanhedrin 103b. The new word to me, adduce, is to cite as evidence. I adduce quite a bit, don't I? Now, when we bind up the testimony, we are cataloging and giving it a home. In the case of Torah or the testimony, it's to write it down and file it neatly in our libraries, making it easy to find.
Or stand
sealing
up for it.
Sealing up Torah. Oh, go ahead.
Or stand up for it. That's the way I would generally put it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to write it down, file it neatly in our libraries, make it easy to find, stand up for it. Correct. Seal up Torah among our disciples is what we do on this program and in our online rooms on Shabbat, walking Torah on Shabbat Shalom Mesa, MC, and Fulfilling Torah Ministries, MP, okay? We do this stuff every Shabbat, okay? And you can find us on Pal Talk, just in case you didn't know. And I'm going to stop there at verse 16.
Okay, so are we ready to continue?
We are, I think.
I actually read all the way through verse 18, and I've commented on that myself, too. Seal up the Torah, and I think we're ready to continue, unless you want to add something else.
What I'm going to hit on right now is 17 through 19, so I'd like you to get at least 19 in.
Go ahead.
But there are only three more verses, so you may as well get to the end.
You want me to read to the end of the chapter? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, may as well.
So when they say unto you, seek those who are mediums and wizards who whisper and mutter. Now, right there, that ought to be kind of a clue. These are not good people telling you that, because that would be contrary to his word. That sounds like they could be working for the deep state. But, you know, one thing's for sure, they're not on Team Yah. So when they say those things, should not a people seek their Elohim? Should they seek the dead on behalf of the living? To the Torah and to the testimony. Again, this is one of those places where I prefer the Hebrew word because so much has been done wrong by translating it as law. To the Torah and to the testimony. If they do not speak... are you saying something, Mark?
Nope.
Oh, it was an echo. I had a bad echo. Must be the FBI tapping in. Anyway,
I got a bad echo every time you read.
Okay. If they do not speak according to this word, let me read that again. If they do not speak according to this word, it's because there is no light in them. Now, this is one that I've got it highlighted, and I suggest people be able to turn to this one too. That's Isaiah chapter 8, verse 20. All right. Remember this one. Isaiah 8, 20. If they do not speak according to this word, which word? His written word. And what was Yeshua? The Torah made flesh. He taught the Torah,
right.
the law. If they do not speak according to that, well, they're liars and the truth is not in them. And there is no light in them. This is exactly what he says. It's what Yohanan says. It's what Paul actually says, but they twist that and don't get it. So there's nothing here that's inconsistent. Let me read the last couple of verses. They will pass through it hard-pressed and hungry, and it'll happen when they are hungry that they shall be enraged and curse their king and their Elohim, their God, and look upward. Then they will look to the earth and see trouble and darkness, gloom and anguish, and they will be driven into darkness. Gee, that sounds like what we could see happening pretty much every single day. All right, that's the end of the chapter, and MP, we got about 4 minutes. Go ahead and take it where you'd like.
All right, well, let's. I'm going to start back here in verse 17. Yeshayahu says that he is waiting for and seeking Yah in verse 17 because he's hiding his face from the house of Yaakov. But Yeshayahu will not stop seeking Yah's face. This is what we all should be saying and chasing after. The problem comes in because we all have things that we need to attend to every day, every hour, and every minute. Now, for instance, in my case, I have a lovely bride and an old, decrepit, and absolutely wonderful 96-year-old father-in-law to help care as well. Caring for my father-in-law is a ministry unto Yah, or at least that's how I see it. Now, Zamra gave us this on verse 17. And I will wait for Hashem, even though he hides his face from the house of Yaakov. One of the hardest challenges of faith, this is still Zamra talking, one of the hardest challenges of faith in the times of Ahaz and Hezekiah was that Yehuda witnessed the catastrophe that befell the 10 tribes with their exile. This was the hiding of his face from the house of Yaakov, as prophesied in Deuteronomy 31:18. Yet, Yeshayahu had faith that he would not hide his face from Yehuda if they would keep his Torah. And I've got a little note here that says, see Metzudas David on verse 17 and Rashi on verse 18, and I'm going to hit a couple of things here. And Yah said to Moshe, behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, and this people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant, which I have made with them. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. And they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, are not these evils come upon us because Eloheinu is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they have shall have wrought, in that they are turned unto other gods. And when they say to you, consult the mediums and the wizards that chirp. Okay. The prophet warns people to reject all forms of divination and punditry and put their faith only in Torah and true prophets. F.B. Meyer has this on verses 18, on chapter 8 and verses 19 and following. The Prince of Peace. When men cease to trust in Elohim and rely on the help of men, they often turn to necromancy and spirit rapping. The medium takes the place of the mediator. The seance is sought after instead of the law and the testimony. What have Elohim's children to do with backstair gossip when their father's presence in the chamber is open to them? What does he, what he does not tell us is not worth our knowing. The land of Galilee was destined to suffer sorely, but better days would dawn on its mountains and lakes. The joy that was in store is compared to the daybreak in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 2, to the joy of harvest in Isaiah 8 and verse 3, and to the gladness and the harried tribes that Gideon broke the power of Midian in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 4. The implements of battle would become fuel for the peasants' cottage fires. What type, you know, they're going to be burning up the shafts of the spears and like that, okay? Because they're going to need it. Anyway, what tides are these for Moshe'enu? They befit no human babe. Let us place the government of our lives on his shoulders, and as it extends, so shall our peace. Ask Elohim's zeal to do this for you. In the power of his grace.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back.
I'm breathing, and I pray, don't take me soon, cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around, because
do do dum do do dum dum, come a down do do dum dum, Camel, camel, down, dooby-doo, down, down. Keeping Torah's a joy to do. Let's say that line, bound by the law. The 16 and many more. Don't they know what's really true? Yeshua, double me and you. I keep the
all right, we are back, folks. Final segment today of the Torah Teachers Roundtable Tanakh Edition. We just finished at least the reading part through Chapter 8, and a whole lot of stuff in there that, again, I tend to suggest just sounds oh so relevant to what we have been seeing and are seeing again. MP, why don't you, I know you got someplace you want to go with it. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. As I've been saying throughout this show, I mean, in different places, the fact is that we are reading today in Isaiah chapter 8. We're reading a lot of the stuff that's happening right now in this world. Okay, this just foreshadowed it by 3,000 years or so. Okay. It's absolutely amazing how much of what we're seeing in this chapter we are also seeing out in the world going on right now. Okay. So anyway, I got cut off at this place right here. I'm going to go back the beginning of the last paragraph. The land of Galilee was destined to suffer sorely, but better days would dawn on its mountains and lakes. The joy that was in store is compared to the daybreak in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 2, to the joy of harvest in verse 3, and to the gladness of the harried tribes when Gideon broke the power of Midian in verse 4. Isn't that interesting? Gideon broke the power of Midian. That's cool. The implements of battle would become fuel for the peasants' cottage fires. What titles are these for Moshiach? They befit no human babe. Let us place the government of our lives on his shoulders, and as it extends, so shall our peace. Ask Elohim's zeal to do this for you. In the power of his grace, put the government of all on the wonderful Son of Elohim. And I agree entirely with this Christian commentary from the 1800s. Azamra just skips over verse 20, which is a wonderful verse to keep in our minds. To the law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it's because no light is in them. Okay, now I will close my commentary with Azamra's commentary on the last three verses of chapter 8. Verses 21 to 23 prophetically depict the calamity that would befall the 10 tribes where they would be exiled by the Assyrians and would angrily curse the king and their idols after they had let them down so badly, and would finally look upward to search out Hashem. That's according to Rashi on verse 21. Now, verse 22 alludes to the three stages in which the exile of the 10 tribes took place. The first came in the fourth year of the reign of Ahaz, when the Assyrians exiled the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun. The second came in Ahaz's 12th year, when he exiled the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, living east of the river Jordan. The third and last stage came with the exile of the remainder of the 10 tribes in the 6th Hizkiyahu. Bestead, in verse 821, is a strange word. To our advanced and enlightened society, civilization. But the Hebrew 7185 that is translated that way is kasha, to support, or rather a supporting pillar. And Google has it, it's got to be true if Google's got it, as to help, assist, serve, or avail. I can see how that all fits. Verse 21 seems to go ahead and look forward from the Hebrew 4601 ma'al, to deceive, to cover up, from another Hebrew 5927 Allah, which means to rise up and or develop. It really looks like the word Allah is the actual Hebrew root behind all of these, and it happens to be one of the names of a pagan god.
It's a different. Well, Allah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
It's spelled differently, but yeah, that's what I got for chapter 8.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it does mean to go up.
Let's.
It does mean to go up. But by the way, people will recognize the root word that they've probably heard, Aliyah, which means to return
right.
to the land.
Aliyah,
it's a term
right.
that's used for those that that make Aliyah. Okay.
Exactly right.
So let's see. It was one other comment.
I want to develop is what it means. To rise up or to develop is what it means, and I got a feeling that the Muslims either had that word that means very much the same thing, or they just stole it from Israel.
Oh, because, I know what I was going to add.
Rise up or develop works perfectly.
The term that people will also be familiar with is Allahu Akbar. And essentially, this is where yeah. I would say there's some difference. The literal translation of that, I am told, I'm not an Arabic expert, is that that means Allah is greater. Greater than what? Well, the implication is greater than that other God who wrote a different book as opposed to the Quran.
Okay. Well, we can move on. I have nothing in store for you.
We're going to do then is we're going to continue into chapter 9, and we'll pick it up here next time. I guess by way of summary, part of the reason why I was trying to say, this is kind of interesting to me. And I wanted to see the connections earlier. So the first part of the chapter, MP, begins with the names of a whole bunch of Maher, Shalal, Hashbaz, and some references to place names and so forth, the riches of Damascus, things that we see and that certainly the various sages have said, all of these have prophetic end-time connections. But it just bugs me when we get to the end of the book and it leaps off the page that, in fact, those who will not speak according to his word, and they basically talk about all kinds of things except what is really supposed to be here, which is wait on Yahuwah, the real, no, not Jesus, but Yahushua, the Torah made flesh, is a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both houses of Israel. So before we continue, I want to just summarize this. Both houses of Israel, I emphasize the fact that the whore church doesn't like the Yahushua, the salvation of Yah, literally is what his name means, who did not do away with his own Torah, but in fact came to fulfill at least a large part of it. Did he fulfill everything? Well, no, Damascus is still a city and so forth, so I'm not with the 70 AD amillennial preterist crowd on that score. But I will suggest, hey, there's another piece to this, right? It says that the real Yahushua is a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both houses. Well, you know what? Most of us that have had the opportunity or the experience in our lives of talking to a real studious Torah obedient Jew and saying, Jesus did away with the law. That's why you got to come to Jesus. You're going to burn in hell. And he says, you know, you're full of it. Well, it turns out that Jesus is in fact a stone of stumbling to those that recognize the Torah, and it's not done away with. And if in fact Jesus did away with the law, then he's a liar and the truth is not in him. So that's why I think this ought to really resonate,
right.
And why there is so much rejection on the part of both of those whoring houses. That would go for the rabbinic crowd and the Sun God Day Christian crowd to say, I don't want to look at what Isaiah 8 really says here. No, we don't like that at all. Go ahead, Mark. Any other comments on it?
I'd like to cover what happened to it. Okay, here we go. The opening for chapter 9. I got it in the blue letter, Esword X, rather.
You want to read it? Go ahead, then.
Got a nice little opening here. Covers Isaiah 8, 19 through 9, 7. And here's what it has to say.
Oh, you lost me. Not chapter 9, back into 8 again?
This covers Isaiah 8:19, which is like two verses ago, through 9:7.
Okay, so I thought you were saying you were going into 9, but you're not. You're going to go back a bit.
I am going into 9. I'm going to hit their cover for the beginning of the chapter.
Okay.
When men cease to trust in Elohim and rely on the help of men, they often turn to necromancy and spirit wrapping. The medium takes the place of the mediator. The seance is sought after instead of the law and the testimony. What have Elohim's children to do with backstair gossip when the Father's presence, his chamber, is open to them? What he does not tell us is not worth our knowing. The land of Galilee was destined to suffer sorely, but better days would dawn on its mountains and lakes. The joy that was in store is compared to the daybreak in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 2, to the joy of harvest in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 3, and to the gladness of the harried tribes when Gideon broke the power of Midian in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 4. The implements of battle would become fuel for the peasants' cottage fires. What titles are these for our master? They befit no human babe. Let us place the government of our lives on his shoulders, and as it extends so shall our peace. Ask Elohim's zeal to do this for thee. In the power of his grace, put the government of all on the wonderful Son of Elohim. And that is F.B. Meyer's opening for chapter 9. So.
Okay.
Want to read?
Do you have any comment on that before we do
that?
Nope,
that was just the commentary from F.B. Meyer. A commentator from the 1800s.
Right, and I suspect that they probably had a better clue in the 1800s who he really was, as opposed to some of those that are commenting today. That would be all I would add, because there was nothing in the text as written that I would necessarily take issue with. Okay, chapter 9 says the following, and it begins with nevertheless, so it sounds like it's a continuation. Remember, the chapter markers were added a long time later. Nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed, as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. Those are the northern part of the land, if you recall, and the tribes that would have been later part of the 10 lost tribes. And afterward, more heavily oppressed by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan in Galilee of the Goyim nations. It's translated as Gentiles in the English I'm looking at here, but remember, the Gentile reference generally has a more pagan connotation, which is probably not that far off in this case. The people who walked in darkness,
right.
Yeah, that makes the point, have seen a great light. Those who dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. This too sounds a bit like a messianic prophecy, right? You have multiplied the nation and increased its joy. Joy, okay. Sameach, right? Simcha, that we know that root word too. They rejoice before you. There's the same root word. According to the joy of harvest. That, again, sounds like a reference to not only the holy days that we just had, but also the time that we know that the Mashiach was born. As men rejoice when they divide the spoil, for you have broken the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, as in the day of Midian. For every warrior's sandal from the noisy battle and garments rolled in blood will be used for burning and fuel for fire. Okay. MP, go ahead. I'll pause there because everybody's going to know the next couple of verses.
Yeah, you're. Yeah, this is the part that I dread. Anyway, nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as in her vexation. Okay, when at the first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. Exactly, he lightly afflicted them. He always gives us a warning, and then a slightly rougher warning, and then a slightly rougher warning until eventually, if we don't pay heed, he takes us down. Okay? And that's exactly what happened with Zebulun and Naphtali. They were the first ones to get the warning in the northern tribes. And, it got worse and worse and worse because they didn't take heed to what was going on. They didn't realize that it was Elohim that was bringing this to them with the intent of turning them around. Not with the intent of actually punishing them, but with the intent of turning them back towards him. If they had done that, everything would have worked out just fine. In fact, if these two tribes were the first ones to go, if they hadn't gone, then the others might not have at all. Okay? So, this is Yah's mercy working on the people who aren't really deserving any of it right now because they're working against him. They're turning their backs on him. So, this is kind of an interesting kind of thing. And we're going to be seeing this with the other tribes probably in this chapter. I haven't read beyond where we have so far. But, you know, and this is not going to be real good, but Yah is still going to be nudging them to try to get them to turn back to him. And that's the whole point of punishment that comes from him. Okay? We get a punishment because we did something that he didn't like very much and he needed to correct us. And, you know, I had a major correction about 14 years ago when I was cutting down that tree. I had a major correction. It's the reason I have a real hard time putting together sentences while I'm speaking. The words don't want to come. Anyway, I'm gonna quit there. Verse 2 or 3, where I got to. Thou hast multiplied the nation, not increased the joy. Okay, so.
Well, if you want to, we've got about 6 minutes. Let's go ahead and cut to the chase here. Obviously, we're going to hit a place that is going to include some verses that everybody has heard a whole lot of times. And I hate to do the setup and not get to the punchline, at least as far as a lot of folks are going to be concerned. So, unless you want to add anything before I read on to 6, let me go ahead and do it.
No, you may go ahead.
All right, for it says, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and you can almost sing it with me, right? From the yep. Messiah, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, right. The Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and shalom, there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever. Ha'olam, the zeal of Yahuwah Zevuot, will perform this. So that's a good breaking point. I'll let you comment. That'll probably take us to the top of the hour. And we'll pick it up with a little bit of a summary of this next week, and then we'll finish the rest of the chapter, because we are going to change, not necessarily theme, but certainly into some other elements that people aren't going to be quite as familiar with, I suspect.
Yep, that will probably work. the false leadership that is... And that's actually in verses 8 through 17. The false leadership is going to bring ruin. They defied God. They truly did. They refused to repent. They were blind and they were deaf and they were profane, according to chapter 8 and verse 13. Their religious and political leaders led them astray. Especially the political ones, probably. The religious ones had to at least keep up a front. The political leaders could do whatever they pleased. And then we see that happening with our political leaders in this country and all over the world right now. We are really and truly asking Yah to judge us as a world citizens. You know what I mean? There's very little that a radio station like this and the teachers that are on it can actually get done worldwide. But we can get to the people who are online and on the air listening. Okay? We can influence them. We have a real hard time getting our message out beyond there. And fortunately, there are other venues where people can get it too, local to themselves. But we need to have a personal revival, each and every one of us. We need to do it every day. And we need to thank Yah that he gives us the opportunity, okay, to make teshuvah, to turn back to him and start going his way, start doing the things that he wants us to do rather than sitting around and watching TV or, like that. So anyway, I'm gonna quit there. I've said enough.
Right. Well, we've got about a minute and a half then, and I guess what I'll do is to kind of set up where we're going to go next week, because again, it begins with this idea of, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. We hear the names that we're so familiar with, and yet, the thing that I want to continue to emphasize, the thread here that we see in Isaiah 8 going into 9, and by the way, it begins all the way back at the beginning with this reference to a land that I suggest certainly seems very familiar, where we have those two kingdoms, the two whoring wives, both of them fall into idolatry, both are then exiled, and now we're seeing that, once more, the real Mashiach, the one who is not exactly what either whoring house wants to have, the southern kingdom rejected him because he wasn't a political leader and so forth, and he also seemed to kind of run afoul of some of the rabbinic teachings of the time. They had added a whole bunch of stuff, and he said, hey, adding to and subtracting from, that's not so good. So for a whole lot of reasons, he was rejected by both houses of Israel. A stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. And now what we're seeing is this reference to the child is born, the increase of his government. But I guess the way I want to end, and we've got about a little over a minute, Mark, if you want to comment too, is here we are at a place where I'm going to suggest we have to make a choice. We have to come out of those things that are headed in the wrong direction. We got to recognize that there are evil versus evil wars going on, and that's, I think, the real key. And sometimes the right answer, if we serve the Prince of Peace, of Shalom and Him alone, is to say, come out. Don't be a part of either whoring house. Don't get involved in either of these two battles, because neither one of them is on the side of the Most High. Wait on Him and recognize Him, and don't be tied into the conspiracy theories. No, a lot of the conspiracy theories turn out to be facts. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the ones that are being played out right today that we have to be wary of. All right, MP, any final comments? 30 seconds or a little bit more?
Amen. This is the hard part for me. The people, when men cease to trust in Elohim and rely on the help of men, they often turn to, other things, like magic, that kind of stuff.
False gods.
The false gods, yeah. The seance is sought after instead of the law and the testimony, which is really silly. I mean, you don't know that spirit that you're calling up.
All right. Well, one thing's for sure, there's a lot of spirit of death in the world today. Hey, thanks, MP. Shalom, folks.